Providence for Today welcomes you to the study of God's incomparably precious and never-changing Word. This is Pastor David Simpson in behalf of Providence Church of Powell, Tennessee, and friends of the Gospel of God's Sovereign Grace. We trust God will powerfully and effectually reveal His Word to our hearts and apply it to our lives. Providence Church Place of Worship is located at 104 Faust Kearney Road. You'll find us on Clinton Highway, just up from the Claxton Elementary School. When writing, please address mail to P.O. Box 1467, that's 1467, Powell, Tennessee, that's simply TN37849. Our radio broadcasts, Sunday sermons, and other resources are available on our website. Please visit us at www.providenceundergrace, that is all one word, P-R-O-V-I-D-E-N-C-E, providenceundergrace.com. You can also listen to additional messages by downloading the Sermon Audio mobile app on your handheld devices or by visiting sermonaudio.com. Then if you'll type in Pastor David Simpson, you will find your location. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook at simply Providence Church. Your interest and your attendance with us in worship on Sundays at 10 o'clock is welcomed. We're meeting just the one time now as we continue to work on our building. But we're moving closer to moving back to our regular schedule. We are now in our third year on WYSH Radio, broadcasting out of Clinton and Knoxville, Tennessee, which are nestled at the foothills of the beautiful Smoky Mountains. Via the Internet, the broadcast has the potential of reaching folks with the gospel around the world. To those who listen to our broadcast in other states and countries, you are a most welcome guest of Providence Church. I continue to be grateful for the support and prayers of so many. It is my prayer that God will cause His Word to reach His chosen sheep, and that He will call each by His own sovereign grace declared in His gospel, wherein the righteousness of God is revealed. In our study of the encounters with Jesus in John's gospel, we have moved through 17 chapters, and we step today into the 18th chapter. It opens with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane with His 11 disciples. And today we find this theme in the first 12 verses. Jesus is arrested by the Jewish officers. Very shamefully, I might say. Let me suggest that as many of you as possible set the scriptures in front of you and read along with me. I know it is not possible for many of you. Some of you are in the hospital. Some of you are driving. Some of you have vision problems. Others are on vacation. And I hope that no matter what your circumstance, that you will take a little time and share God's Word with me today. Now, the gospel record in John 18, we come to see that Jesus entered the third time alone into the remote part of Gethsemane. Twice He had returned and rebuked Peter, James, and John for sleeping. In Matthew 26, verse 40 and 41, Jesus said, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." How could they sleep with what was about to happen, I ask? Yet they didn't understand. We might have done the same. When Jesus returned to the garden, Matthew records He prayed, "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, Thy will be done." That's what He was all about, the will of God. And the third time He told them, "Sleep on now, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners." He had spoken of an hour ever since His first recorded miracle at the wedding of Cana in John 2. Now He said, "The hour is at hand." Back in the early days, He kept saying, "Mine hour is not at hand." But now He says, "My hour is at hand." And the betrayal was consummated. Judas Iscariot had committed his dastardly deed of betrayal. And that brings us to our text. We're in John 18, but you can also find parallel verses in Matthew 26, verse 45 to 56, Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 41, Luke 22, beginning in verse 47. And we turn our attention to these verses in John 18. The last year of the life and ministry of Christ, the hostility of the Jews to him had greatly increased. About 6 months before the Passover, they had definitely decided to arrest him. At the Feast of Tabernacles, which would have been September for us, they sent officers to take him, it says in John 7:32. And John recorded in John 7:44, and some of them which would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. And after the raising of Lazarus in John 11 and verse 44, the Jewish authorities, including Caiaphas the high priest, convened a council, and they spoke openly of the need for Jesus to be put to death in order to preserve the nation. You read of that in verse 47 to 53 of John 11. John records that Jesus frustrated their plans by walking no more openly among the Jews, but retired to the wilderness border country. John further records they consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. So they wanted to put anyone to death that might be a challenge to them. Lazarus, not because he had done anything, but because he was such an example of the power of Christ. As the Passover drew near in the early spring, which would have been probably March, they were more earnest to take him, but they feared the people and wished to wait. Nevertheless, when Judas fell into their hands, they could not resist. And on Wednesday, 2 days before Passover, a council meeting was convened at the palace of Caiaphas, and Judas agreed to betray his master for money. We read that in Matthew 26, verse 14 and following, and also in Mark 14, verse 10 and 11. So the story unfolds in this most compelling and moving account of Jesus' arrest. It is likely this chapter begins with a reference back to chapters 14, 15, and 16, which began in the upper room and moved out of the upper room past the temple toward Gethsemane and Mount Olivet. Now, I'm going to read a little bit more than I usually do. I want to read these first 12 verses, so listen carefully or read along if you have your scriptures in front of you. So in John 18 and verse 1, it said, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, which was a garden into which he entered and his disciples. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft-time resorted there with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. In verse 4 it says, Jesus therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said, whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. That's what's recorded. I'll speak of more of that in a moment. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. Now verse 6. And as soon as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, whom seek ye? And they said unto him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, of them which thou gave me, I have lost none. In verse 10, then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it, and smote the high priest's servant, and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then said Jesus unto Peter, in verse 11, put up thy sword into the sheath, The cup which the Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Then the band and the captain and officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him. Now I want to try to speak to this passage in terms of laying out some facts in front of you. And the first fact that I give you is this. Judas led knowing the secret place in Gethsemane. It tells us here in verses 1 through 3 that there were a band of men and officers from the chief priest and the Pharisees. Matthew 26, he calls them officers of the chief priest and Pharisees. Mark simply calls them scribes and elders. And Luke refers to them in chapter 22 as a great multitude. Now, John's band was the Roman soldiers put under temple authority. This was perhaps 100 soldiers, but no more, or else they must have a Roman captain. And the captain is mentioned in John 12 and verse, in chapter 18 and verse 12, rather a little later, was the officers of the Jews. So this is not the officers, captain of the officers from the Roman soldiers. So about Roman soldiers, about 100 Roman soldiers, I may say. Matthew and Mark said they had swords and staffs. John said they had lanterns, torches, and weapons. And though it was a full moon, they carried torches to make sure he didn't escape, make sure they didn't arrest the wrong person and be disappointed on the next day. So each of the disciples gives a very similar account, a little different, not conflicting with each other, but filling in the gaps and telling us of more than 100 men coming to face Jesus and find him with lights, torches on this bright night to make sure they found the man they wanted. So the first fact is that Judas led knowing the secret place in Gethsemane. And the second fact that I give you is this. Judas had agreed to reveal Jesus by a kiss. John recorded this in verse 4. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? Matthew records Jesus saying, Friend, wherefore are you come? Chapter 26 and verse 50. And Mark records Judas saying, Rabbi, Rabbi, and kissed him. And may I say, this is a greeting of pretense, my friends. And Luke records Jesus saying, Judas, do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? Now the word betray is a word that shows continuous action. Do you continue to betray? Are you going to persist in this betrayal? I know what you're doing. Do you now persist and continue in what you're doing? And the word kiss is an intensified word. It's not just a simple kiss, but it was a kiss that seemed to show some passion. It showed strength in this toward Jesus. It was not of love, but it was in order to show a true kiss that this was the man that they were after. A kiss upon his cheek was a kiss that would show that this was the man. So the first fact is that Judas led, knowing the secret place in Gethsemane. Secondly, Judas had agreed to reveal Jesus by a kiss. And here's the third fact. Jesus addressed the great multitude. In verse 4 it says, Jesus therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? Knowing all things shows them to be God because he is omniscient. And then it says, that should come upon him, he was not taken by surprise. Rather, he foreordained his own arrest, the desertion of his disciples, the denial of Peter, the trial, the ill treatment, and the crucifixion. He knew all things because he predestined all things to come to pass. How can you know all things if you don't foreordain all things? But both of those are true. He knew because he foreordained. And then it simply says that he went forth. His surrender and his death were voluntary acts. This didn't remove the guilt of Judas Iscariot or Judas's cohorts, by no means. Still, Jesus went forth to meet them, to speak to them, to give himself over to them, to lay down his back so that he could be smitten by the smiter, if you please. And then Jesus asked them, "Whom seek ye?" Now, if he knew all things, why does he ask, "Whom seek ye?" This isn't a question of ignorance, but of revelation. He wanted to show them he had no fear. Rather, resolution consumed his soul. He wanted it known that he would not slip by them this time as he had in the past. He offered himself to them. He was willingly apprehended, and he of voluntary will suffered. In verse 5 it says, "They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said unto them, and it's recorded, "I am he." Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. Jesus of Nazareth, it says, their eyes were dimmed to him. As many as they times as they had seen him before, they knew him not. I don't even think that Judas at that moment knew him. And then they said, "Jesus of Nazareth," and he literally said, "I am." He didn't say, "I am he." He simply said, "I am." So he is not in the text. So many of you are ahead of me already. You know where this takes us. His announcement is no small declaration. It's traced to Exodus chapter 3 and verse 14. In that passage, Moses asks God of Israel, "What is your name?" as God is sending him forth to Israel. And the pre-incarnate Christ answered, "I am that I am." In Exodus 3:14, "I am that I am." This is a simple to-be verb. It means, "I am the self-existing one. I am the eternal one. I am the immutable, unchanging one. I am that I am. There is none beside me." This concerns his name Jehovah, originally in the Hebrew Yahweh, with the vowels being added in order to make a sound out of them. And so it is a name that is given, Jehovah, and with these, I think I said it backwards, the consonant sounds added to the vowels. And this declaration appears in the book of John, where he said, "I am the bread of life," in John 6 and 35. "I am from him that sent me," in chapter 7 and verse 29. "I am from above," chapter 8 and verse 23. "I am the door," chapter 10 and verse 9. "I am the good shepherd," in verse 14 of chapter 10. "I am the Son of God," in chapter 10 and verse 36. "I am the resurrection and the life," in chapter 11 and verse 25. "I am the way, truth, and the life," John 14 and verse 6. "I am in the Father and the Father in me," in chapter 14 and verse 10. In chapter 15, when they departed from the upper room and began their walk toward the garden, just a short time before this, he said, "I am the true vine," in chapter 15 and verse 1. Now here in chapter 18, he simply said, "I am." Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them, John recorded. I remind you that just a little while before, Judas Iscariot was with Jesus and the disciples at the supper. Now he has become a political opportunist. He is not an idle spectator here. He is one of the group of religious, political, military, hardened men. Judas Iscariot is included here because he knew not Christ any more than the others, though he had been with him for, I'm sure, over 3 years. He had no pricking in his conscience. He had no sense of sin. He was blind to all of his iniquity. Judas Iscariot was shocked because Jesus went out to meet them. He didn't escape as before. He showed no cowardice or fear. And Jesus saying, "I am," was a claim to be the same as God in the flesh. They knew not what they heard, but notice the power of his words. In verse 6 it said, and as soon as he had said that unto them, I am, they went backward and fell to the ground. They were confused and confounded. Yea, they were shocked and intimidated. Instead of apprehending him, he apprehended them. Rather than overpowering him, he overpowered them. They became powerless before his almightiness. His words hit them, and they hit the ground. He demonstrated what he would later declare to Pilate in chapter 19 and verse 11, you could have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. And so these men could not arrest him, except he would willingly bend his back, give his hands, lay his head out for them to take him. He could have struck them deaf and dumb, blind and broken, dead and suffering in the fires of hell with the rich man at that moment. We might observe that Judas Iscariot was just hours from just punishment, because Luke would call it that, saying that he went to his own place in Acts chapter 1. And it's just less than 24 hours before that would take place. But again, here we see divine restraint and forbearance to enact judgment. My friends, can you see this in your mind? These long-robed Pharisees with their fancy religious garments, and these war-hardened soldiers with their armor suddenly being hurled to the ground by an unknown and unseen power? Wow! Before sovereignty, they were as dried wheat straw and stubble. In verse 7, it says, then ask ye them again, whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. This supposed them rising unhurt. While he could have hurt them, he never maimed, but he used them to demonstrate his power and authority. He knew they sought him, and he inquired again, whom seek ye? Recovered by their hardened malice and with wicked impudence, they again answered, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus answered, I have told you I am. If therefore you seek me, let these, referring to his disciples, go their way. I have told you that I am. As he said in Matthew 11 in verse 20, he began to upbraid the cities. Here he upbraided them. That is, with his answer, he reproached and reviled them. In infinite control, he laid them low in absolute stupidity. If therefore you see me, let these go their way. He spoke not to implore them for mercy, but with an imperative to command them. Let these go. Just as God had spoken back in behalf of Israel, let my people go, in Exodus. In verse 9, that the saying might be fulfilled, which he spoke, of them which you gave me, I have lost none. I'm quite sure this is a reference back to John 17 as he prayed to the Father. This has respect to the disciples at hand, but it also includes all his elect. It again points us to God's keeping and preserving his people. So we have seen the first fact that Judas led, knowing the secret place in Gethsemane. Secondly, that Judas had agreed to reveal Jesus by a kiss. Thirdly, we saw, in fact, that Jesus addressed the great multitude. Now we see fact number 4, and that is Jesus and his disciples were surrounded by the multitude. Jewish zealots and Roman soldiers engulfed the Lord and his men. Yet in sovereignty, he said, I lost none, meaning I will lose none now either. Luke records them saying, Lord, shall we smite them with a sword? Matthew, Mark, and Luke record one of them drew his sword and cut off the ear of the servant of the high priest. Jesus said, then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant, cut off his right ear. And the servant's name is Malchus. And so this being told to us that this is who has done this, I have an idea that Peter was not aiming for his ear, but for his head or his neck. I remind you that Simon was not a soldier, but a fisherman. I doubt he had ever been in a serious, true, life-to-death sword fight. And may I say, this is zeal without knowledge, according to Romans 10. But nevertheless, it does show insurmountable courage and commitment. Luke recorded that Jesus said, "Suffer you thus far," and he touched his ear and healed him in chapter 22. Malchus is thought to be the personal servant or slave of Caiaphas, the high priest, and this is the last recorded miracle cure by the Lord Jesus Christ. In verse 11 it says, "Then said Jesus unto Peter, Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" He spoke of the cup of suffering and sin-bearing, satisfaction of the law and substitution for his people. This required obedience unto death and enduring the shame of the cross. By fulfilling the requirements of the law in life and enduring the penalties of the law in death, he established perfect righteousness, suited to imputation to the account of his people. This God did upon the completion of his work, thus remitting their sin, redeeming them from the law's curse, and justifying them before a holy God. So number four, Jesus and his disciples are surrounded by the multitude. Number five, Jesus spoke to the temple leaders. Mark tells us that Jesus said, "Are you come out as against a thief with sword and staves to take me? I was with you daily in the temple teaching, and you took me not, but the scriptures must be fulfilled." In other words, this is done because the scriptures declare it to be so. And Luke recorded that Jesus saying to the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders, "Be you come out as against a thief with swords and staves? When I was daily with you in the temple, you stretched forth no hands against me, but this is your hour and the power of your darkness." Listen to this. This is your hour. He had already said, "This is my hour." Now he said, "This is your hour." It was the hour that was appointed to him, but it was also the hour appointed to them, and the power of darkness. Oh, demonic darkness was upon him. The longest statement is in Matthew 26, beginning in verse 52, but I'll not take time to read it. His words were not directed toward the Roman soldiers at this point, but to the Jewish leaders. Truth number six is this. The disciples departed the scene. So Matthew and Mark tell us that all the disciples forsook him and fled. It may show weakness on their part, but rather it shows, I think, the power and the dominion of Christ. "Let these go their way," John said. And then point number seven, Jesus was escorted as a criminal to be feared. Matthew, Mark, and Luke say, "Then they took him," and John simply said that they bound him. Each gospel said they led him away. In verse 12, "Then the band and the captains and the officers took Jesus and bound him." I'm going to begin here next week talking about the fact that his arrest was illegal. And you might want to think a little bit about the illegality of Jesus being taken. But I say to you that in sovereign submission, he relented to his conspirators. And I must stop here, but John's gospel continues to be built on a series of encounters with Jesus and a variety of persons. Here it is with his disciples, but moreover, it is with Judas, it is with the Jews, and it is with the Romans. And each encounter builds on the single premise that the eternal Word of God entered the human race, put away the sin of his elect people, and earn righteous satisfaction of the whole law of God, which righteousness God accepted and reckoned to the account of his people. I look forward to visiting with you again next week. I am Pastor David Simpson saying, until the next time, may the light of providence direct all your paths, and may the hand of providence supply all your needs.